Hi, welcome to Forensic Forecast. I'm Lee. This is Simon.
Hello.
He's talkative, as you can tell. Simon is my brother. We both work for the same forensics firm in the northwest of England. Do lots of computer forensics, digital forensics kind of work. And we've noticed that there's not a great deal of podcasts around about the subject. There's Cyberspeak, which is fantastic, and I really enjoy listening to that one. But the others that I've heard, probably not really up to scratch. Obviously, this one isn't going to be up to scratch either for a little while until we find our feet. But we just thought that we'd try it and see how it goes. Hopefully, we can bring up some interesting points for you in the future. And we'll go from there, really. Each podcast, we're going to look at the brief news articles that we found concerning digital and computer forensics and possibly computer security. And we'll share them with you and share our insights, hopefully get some from other people as time goes on as well. If anyone wants to join in, then they're welcome to. Just contact us at forecast@whitfields.org. You can also find the website for this podcast at whitfields.org/forecast. That's the number 4, CAST. All right, well, let's move on. Simon.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Excellent. I was just wondering if it was worth mentioning the Facebook page as well.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. Yes, we've also got a Facebook group. You can look for it, Forensic Forecast. Once again, it's the 4, CAST. And feel free to join. It's an open group. Anyone can join that. And news about the podcast will be put up there every time we put an episode up. Feel free to contribute, add comments or whatever else along the way. If there's any interesting articles you think we should have a look at, then please post them and we'll take a look. All right, so let's jump right in. And what have we got news-wise this week, Simon?
Well, there's a few things that have come up quite recently. The first of those that I think really stands out is one of Microsoft's tools for law enforcement.
Coffee. I mean,
that's the one.
Now, being good Mormon boys, we're not too familiar with coffee, are we, Simon?
No, not in the literal sense.
So what's coffee?
Well, coffee, that's an acronym for Computer Online Forensic Evidence Extractor. I just read that off my screen. I'm not geeky enough to have memorized that. But it's essentially a USB tool that has been distributed by Microsoft free to law enforcement around the world, and they're able to use it to capture data in a forensic manner from kind of first responding situations.
So this is quite new, really, isn't it? Because if you think about it, the last time we heard anything about Microsoft doing anything forensic-wise was, well, yeah, exactly. There isn't one.
Yeah. It's usually the opposite, isn't it, really? They change something that every forensic examination has been used to in the past, and they change the way of doing things, so all of a sudden you have to start again. But
they
seem to be planning to work a lot more with forensic examiners in the future with things like this going on, and they're, from what I understand, planning on meeting with law enforcement again in the next couple of months.
Yep, that's the only downside about this, really, isn't it? Is that it's only going to be open to law enforcement at the moment. They've got no plans, from what we know, of passing it on to people who maybe do law enforcement work but on a contract basis. So, like, for people like you and me, and I would assume the large number of people that would listen to this podcast or whatever, they're not going to get to see this, which is a bit disappointing, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is. I think it's probably a lot of fuss. I'm not so sure there'll be really a huge amount in there that we haven't already seen in some degree somewhere anyway. I think a lot of the tools that will be available might be the same kind of things you find in like Helix distributions and in other kind of forensic software you can get around.
Now, you see, that's the thing. That's one of the things I wanted to talk about this particular article. This particular article came from betanews.com. And apparently, I mean, when Microsoft first announced this, when the little USB stick with all the tools was first released, people throwing their arms up in the air, the blogosphere, and saying, what's going on? You know, Microsoft have got massive secret back doors they've worked into their system that are just going to allow law enforcement to wander in and do what they please. And I just want to say, first of all, we have to dispel that, because that is really, it's nonsense, isn't it?
Yeah, well, everyone knows that there's fairly frequent security issues and the like with Microsoft operating systems, but they do work to try and patch those up. And I don't suppose they keep any of those secret and and find ways of hacking in and spying on people's internet activity or anything like that.
Now, I imagine that if they had done, that either the hackers would have found them by now, or because Microsoft... well, because the US government uses Microsoft software and uses Windows XP, Microsoft have to disclose any backdoors when they sell them the software, otherwise they could be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, which means that people like Steve Ballmer would end up in prison because they're not disclosing stuff like that. So there are no backdoors programmed into Windows. If it was the case, they would not be allowed to provide services to like the US government or even to the UK government. So to me, the arguments which people put up are completely illogical. And then, sorry, were you going to say something?
No, that's all right. Okay, carry on.
But what you said before is that these are tools which are pretty much already available, aren't they?
Yeah, they seem, well, as far as my understanding of it goes, the things they've said they would do are things we can usually find a way to do anyway. I think if people, if these same bloggers knew of the kind of things we could get into on people's computers, they might throw their arms up in the air again and demand that all forensic investigators be gathered up and gassed somewhere or something.
Well,
we know how extreme these people can get.
They might have a point in some cases.
Yeah, possibly.
But just quoting from a press release from Microsoft, it does not contain new forensics tools, but rather is an easy-to-use automatic forensic tool at the scene. Coffee does not circumvent Windows BitLocker encryption or undermine any protections in Windows through secret backdoors or other undocumented means. So, right there, it's saying it's not using any new tools, but rather it's providing an automated process or framework in which other tools can be used. So, I mean, to me... If they said that from the start, which I'm not sure if they did or not, to be honest, but they probably could have saved themselves a lot of aggravation from the masses.
Yeah, they could well have done. I think another interesting thing is that in recent times people have found ways around things like BitLocker in certain situations. These aren't tools that Microsoft have really commented on yet. Such as being able to circumvent a Windows logon if someone's already previously logged into a system using a FireWire device.
Yeah.
These things are possible anyway, and I don't think Microsoft need to have secret little ways of doing these things when forensic examiners are finding ways to do them anyway.
Yeah. I think that the scary thing for people is that, well, from what I've read in the comments for these news articles and the like, the real fear is that people are really scared that police officers, without any kind of real purpose, can just pop that into anyone's computer they want and just download all the information. Now, obviously, that's not how forensics works, because that, you know, you'd never be able to, first of all, that would be completely inadmissible in court. And second of all, it's a complete breach of someone's human rights. You can't do that without having some good idea of what you're looking for in the first place. You have to have like a warrant and stuff like that. So, I don't know. I think people have really, really overreacted to it. But from our point of view, that's really, really, it seems like an excellent idea. I hope that it's made available to all forensic investigators for too much longer, but if I know Microsoft, as well as I think I know Microsoft, I'd say it's highly unlikely.
Yeah, I think it's not particularly likely. I think these tools are available. It would be handy to have them all in one little USB device, but we can generally cope without them. Yep. And we'll still get on and do the same work before he's done, really.
Yep, well, we can always wait until Helix 2.0 comes out, hopefully sometime before the end of the year. No doubt that will have some interesting stuff that Microsoft probably hasn't thought of. So we'll see how that goes. What else have we got? What other stories are there that we need to talk about today, Simon?
Well, one of the things that's really... it's gone unnoticed by a few people, or at least they haven't really understood the implications of it, is the extreme pornography ideas that are working their way through to potentially become law in the UK.
Yep. Now, I'm reminded of something which I was taught at university, and that is that the law is an ass. And this story, and another one we're going to discuss in just a few minutes' time, am I missing something here? Are the scope of these things far, far too big?
It's the way that when you read through any UK law, it's pretty ambiguous in the way that it's written. And a lot of parts of the law can be construed in all sorts of different ways. And the way we stop that happening, generally speaking, is through a precedent that's set by previous cases. And a judge will usually make a decision based on previous decisions in similar cases. But when new laws come into effect, then that means that there is no precedent for it. And it just depends on interpretation to begin with, and that could end it with anything, really.
Sounds a bit dangerous to me, but from a forensic investigator's point of view, well, first of all, let's talk about the actual law itself. We have to focus on what it means, first of all. So we're talking about anything now, well, when this goes through, anything that looks like it's rape, anything to do with, what you consider quite severe sexual acts, I guess, including bestiality and the like, is now going to be flat out against the law. And if you have that on your computer, you're going to get prosecuted for it. So, it's like you said, it's very, very broad in its meaning and very ambiguous. But there was something on BBC Radio this week that I was listening to, even, where they said that. Well, they're going around interviewing people, and these people were quite horrified by the fact that this law was coming in, because they could see exactly what was going to happen from their point of view. And I'm sure that people who download and look at regular pornography, the chances are there's going to be something somewhere on their computer which comes under this this bill, isn't there?
It's quite likely. We generally see quite a bit of, just general computer examinations, you find chunks of pornography and things on there quite a lot of the times. And it's certainly not out of the question to say that a good chunk of these examinations we do have at least one or two images that you could say fall into these categories.
They're commonplace, in other words, aren't they? That we find them frequently. I believe I'm still yet to see a case. I've been doing investigations for 2 years now, and I'm still yet to see a single case that doesn't have one pornographic picture on it. And now, if you stretch that out and say, well, let's say that, I would say probably about 20% of those cases have had something that falls under this extreme extreme porn bill, we'll call it. And, I mean, we're talking about regular, everyday people here, aren't we? We're not talking about people who are delving into the depths of the internet and finding things which the sleaze of the world has put on there, are we? I mean, we're talking about normal, everyday people who are walking down the street who wouldn't give this kind of thing a second thought.
Yep. It's dangerous when you get into discussing this and discussing what people's interests are that should be counted as legal and what isn't, really, because people have different sort of preferences for all sorts of different things, and you just there's just so much grey area in these sorts of subjects that to try and draft a law that can keep things like this under control is a bit preposterous, really.
Well, one thing which occurs to me is that you could now have something on your computer which you are, you know, you're legally allowed to possess. I mean, I don't know how many films there are that I've seen that don't take this the wrong way. I don't know how many scenes there are in films that I've seen where there's some kind of extreme sexual act, you know what I mean? Like, you see films that quite regularly where someone's been raped or something like that. Are we to assume that these films, that Hollywood films, now fall under this category? And if someone has this on their computer, do we report it? And do these people then get prosecuted, even though, you know, today it doesn't mean a thing?
Yeah, well, this kind of law, I guess, would pretty much insist that as part of its implementation, you have to go back and essentially vet every publication, magazine, production that's been made and see whether it fits into that category, and then suddenly decide that anyone who owns it needs to not own it anymore.
Fantastic. And then
I wouldn't want to be the person in charge of doing that.
Well, I'm sure we'll be helping in that process, won't we? Yeah, and we're the really lucky people in that regard, is that if we end up with any of these things on the screens in front of us doing investigations, that we've got to report it. We've got to find a way to categorise it, like we would with, like, indecent pictures of children or something like that. I mean, are there going to be different levels of extreme porn, like there are different levels of indecent pictures of children, for example? And if there are, the guy who wrote C4P is probably going to have his hands full.
Yeah, there's certainly enough to keep people like that busy, I guess, trying to keep up to date with laws.
I'm sure.
It would just be interesting to see that if this passed in the UK, if it would then follow suit and start becoming law in other countries as well.
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine. I mean, if you look at the States, for example, they're not likely to take this very seriously.
No.
As they don't even take such a lot of things seriously. I think it's four states. Over in the USA, where bestiality is still actually legal. Therefore, you know, you can't really implement something saying you can't have pictures of something which you can go out and do in your backyard, really, can you?
So. Yeah. But we find unusual things like that in the law anyway.
Yeah.
Where one law doesn't quite match up with another.
Yep.
But I think it is a really unusual law to try and pass, and I don't think a lot of the people who are voting on these decisions really quite grasp what it is they're voting for.
No,
because it's something that, unless you're in, I guess, mostly our line of work, you don't quite realise the implications of it. I think there's a good chance it'll be watered down before it gets to the point of being law. Who knows how much by. But one of the things that an MP is currently trying to make sure that things that are currently legal can't be classified as illegal for pictures of them to be on people's computers. Whereas that's not the case in the current draft of this law.
Wait, so just explain that a second.
Okay, well, the current draft of this suggests that anything that appears to be extreme, regardless of whether it's something you can legally go out and do or not, it's illegal to have a picture of that. So there's certain things that I guess you could do if you wanted to in your own home, and they're not technically illegal, but could be judged by someone else as extreme pornography and therefore deemed illegal. And so someone's trying to get that lined up so that at the very least, when this law comes about, anything that is legal, it won't be illegal to have pictures of it. It's all really confusing and a bit of a mess at the moment, and we can only hope that it either gets sorted out or, I guess, just dropped altogether.
Well, you would hope so, but, I mean, this bill has already had its final reading. I mean...
Yeah, I think there was one more due, but I don't know when that is or what's going to happen, but the big opposition to it was... It was voted against 66-30, so it's already looking like two-thirds of Lords and MPs and the like want to see this implemented.
Oh, I'm sure they do, because, well, I'll leave it there. I'm not going to accuse them or point fingers at or even suggest that any MPs might have anything like that or get involved in anything like that at home, because that's just, it's improper of me.
Well, I guess it's just government. The government want to be seen to be doing something in certain situations.
All right.
And so that appears to be what they're trying to do.
Speaking of laws which are going to cause forensic investigators a little bit of a headache, we've also got news that another law which is due to come in soon, is going to be delayed.
Yeah, we've just heard today, I believe, that the changes that have been outlined for the Computer Misuse Act won't be coming in for at least another 6 months.
Yep.
They haven't really said why that is, but they have been delayed. Maybe it's purely because of the objections to these changes in the first place.
Yep. Now, I have no problem with making amendments to the Computer Misuse Act, personally. It was done in 1990. It's very outdated. It's very ambiguous. It's not specific in any area whatsoever. And the police and the CPA are too nervous to prosecute people under it. Therefore, not very many cases are brought. And the cases that are brought, you know, 90% of them or so, something like that, the people are convicted. But once again, they're convicted and the sentencing is very, very weak. So, like I said, welcome changes to the Computer Misuse Act. But this particular change which we're talking about is the possessing of any hacking tools. Now, these tools, I'm sure that if you fired up any forensic investigator's computer, you would find at least five or six of them on one computer, aren't you?
Yeah, it's anyone who deals with computer security will have an abundance of tools that this law would deem illegal. The wording of it appears to be something along the lines of making it an offence to distribute these tools. So whether or not it's illegal to actually possess them or not, I'm not sure. I haven't read that much into the changes being made.
I think when this was originally discussed a few months ago, that it was owning or distributing them, and I don't know if that's changed now. But the other thing, which was made quite specifically, or put quite specifically into it, was that any basically it was pushing people towards buying mass-produced hacking software like Core Impact and stuff like that. But if you had any of the smaller, lesser-known hacking tools such as John the Ripper or Cain and Abel or something like that, they're the ones that you'd be prosecuted for. And to me, it seems as if the government is just playing into the hands a bit of the big software companies.
Yeah, you can kind of see some reasoning behind that, I guess, because you want to try and control the flow of what's going on, but at the same time, you can't please everyone in every way, and you can't force people to use commercial tools, really. It's just, it's not fair on people who try and do things like penetration testing for people and compute security analysis for them on with low overheads and on a budget.
Well, it's not just that either, is it? I mean, you could go out and you could get, like I said, Core Impact is a good example because that's fantastic penetration testing software. I'd love to be able to buy a copy, but, I mean, Encase is expensive enough without adding on other bits and pieces. But Core Impact only does so much. You then have got to go out and find other tools which are produced by proper penetration testing companies in order to get the tools you need to perform more advanced tests. You know, if you're going to penetration test a wireless network, to my knowledge, there's not very many commercial pieces of software that do that. But there are plenty of if non-commercial packages which will do this, which will do that. So, I mean, I don't know. I've always found this to be quite ridiculous. You know what would be interesting? If you tie this back to the first story, where Microsoft say they've not actually used any new forensic tools to get the information from, I wonder how many tools on the coffee USB stick would actually fall under this particular act.
Yeah, there's bound to be one or two. It's it's not something I've really thought about, to be honest. Bringing in this law could mean that some police officers, I'm assuming there's some in the UK that have this coffee.
They're bound to by now.
And if that's the case, then as soon as this comes into law, they're carrying around something illegal.
Yeah. Well, in all fairness, police have got certain provisions made for them anyway, haven't they? But I do find it quite interesting. But anyway, I think that's just about it, really. That's all we wanted to talk about this time around. Just want to quickly note that the Open University now have started to offer a computer forensics module for computing degree. So that basically, I mean, if you're involved in doing some training, or you want to get your degree and you haven't got it yet and you're already working in the industry, it might be a good thing to look into. People who want to crack into the industry might also be a good idea to have a look at that as well. Now, of course, that's only available to people in the UK. Sorry to any Americans listening. You're going to have to pay your extortionate university fees to take a similar course, no doubt.
In actual fact, it wouldn't be that easy to get on that course here anyway, because it's been oversubscribed and there's far too much demand to actually take the course than Open University really expected.
Yeah.
So if you haven't already registered, then try again in about 3 or 4 years.
When I was at university, I begged and pleaded with them to open a computer forensics course. And whether it was anything to do with me or not, I don't know, but they did. And so Simon and I hopped onto it. And it was one of the first in the country at that point. And now, this is what we're talking about 4 years later, that there's loads of them. Almost every university seems to be doing it. Hope University in Liverpool and universities at, like at places like Bolton and stuff like that are all doing computer forensics courses. And where are these people getting their their lesson plans and their trade from?
The majority of them don't. I went to a F3 course a few months ago and spoke to a lecturer. I think he was from the Birmingham area, from a university around there. And he said that essentially they weren't on some of these training days so they could learn what on earth they were supposed to be doing. There were lecturers in other parts of other areas of computing, and they were just told, here you go, learn about this and teach it to people. But you could also say that computer forensics hasn't really been around long enough for there to be many people willing to take the wage drop, essentially, and to go into lecturing at university on the subject.
No, granted. Anyway, don't get me started on the whole university thing. All right, I think that's just about it. Like to thank you for listening, and we're hoping that within a couple more weeks we'll have another episode up for you. If you're interested in appearing on the show to discuss some of the things which we discussed, then feel free to email at forecast@whitfields.org. That's 4CAST at WHITFIELDS.org. Did I say .com before?
I have no idea.
It's .org. Anyway, things never go right in the first one. It's fine. Okay, well, Simon, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Yep, I've enjoyed it. Look forward to doing it again in the future.
Yep, it's not been quite as painful as we imagined.
Nope.
All right, well, take care, and we'll catch you soon. Bye.
See ya.